Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Is 500 million bushels of soybeans too much? And how can corn rally in the face of a 2.4 billion bushel carryover? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with the senior meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. His name is Drew Lerner. Our panelists today are Bill Mayer, Roachag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Normal, Illinois. Let's open the discussion with this question. Why do you think DBC, that's Deutsche Bank, decided to include wheat and corn in the commodity index fund, but not soybeans? FYI on this one, I called DBC, but like most big companies, they can't just comment to media. Approval has to come down from on high. So the question is, why do you think soybeans weren't included? And I know it's not in the index they're tracking, but I still don't get why the other two would be in and beans would be out. And we'll start with you, Bill Mayer.
Well, unfortunately, Todd, they don't always explain those things, but I would guess, if I were guessing, that it probably has something to do with the historical price level of beans versus corn. I think if you look at a long-term, like a 30-year chart of corn, you're probably looking at a lower historical level compared to the past 30 years than you would be with soybeans.
I really don't have no idea. I mean, I'm sure that mix is tuned to a particular direction. Now, you know, if they look at the fundamental pictures, supply-demand balance sheets, I could understand why they did that. Maybe they did that because the balance sheets on wheat and corn are such that if some things would hiccup down the road here in energy prices or weather conditions, those two commodities have a better set of balance sheets to go higher on than probably soybeans would have.
I agree with Dan. I also think that, number one, it takes a lot less margin money to buy a corn and a wheat contract than does a bean contract, and they can control a larger percentage of the market for the dollars spent, and they can move the market more.
And by the way, the folks at Deutsche Bank were pretty kind to me on the phone, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to speak with them more thoroughly maybe early next week. Now, if you're interested in the DBC, you can buy into it. It's $25 a share. That's expected to close this month. It's not trading, actually, on the MX. I suppose it'll be followed on the MX. But if you want to buy it, you can pick it up for $25 a share in the initial offering. There is a website for the index with all the details. We'll drop a link for that in our newsletter, and you can sign up for that newsletter on our website at will.uiuc.edu. Just click on AM and then Agriculture. We did some digging that tells us that this initial fund offering will be a minimum of 2 million and a maximum of 60 million shares. Now, that's a range of cash pretty large, from $50 million to $1.5 billion. We do know the mix of commodities to be purchased and how often it may change. The change only comes once a year. Reapportionment in November or sometime shortly thereafter. So from now until maybe 2007, it looks like DBC will invest this way. 35% of its money into light sweet crude oil, 20% into heating oil, 12.5% into aluminum, 11.25% into corn, 11.25% into wheat, and 10% into gold. So let's do the math just for fun, and we'll say on the high end. 11.25% of $1.5 billion is $168,750,000 that needs to be put into the corn market, and the same amount into the wheat. So let's talk about what happened this week and how much you think they've actually maybe invested. Anybody got an idea of how much the volume, how big the volume in the corn and the wheat pits has been, and what might be attributable to DBC?
I don't have no idea. I mean, those are, you know, confidential type stuff. Now, you can speculate. Nobody knows for sure, and I guess I don't know enough about what went on, specifically as far as the pit orders, how they went in, to really speculate on that. But there is no doubt there was some big index fund buying activity this week, and where it all came from, I don't necessarily know. And you know, if they're smart about it, they're sending it through different channels that nobody can really keep track of what's going on.
So just tell me then, how did it change the marketplace for the week, if it did at all? What happened in the corn and the wheat markets that seems attributable to this one index fund?
Well, I don't know if you can attribute it to any particular one index fund. I think the whole concept of this index fund has got the inventory hedger scared to death. The inventory hedgers just won't sell into anything anymore because these index funds have a lot of muscle, a lot of money to take this stuff higher. They're scared to death, so you have limited sell interest. So it doesn't take a whole lot anymore to take this market higher under this type of environment. Fundamentally, I mean, if there is fundamentally reasoning going on to this market, corn, you can, with if we're going to reduce corn acres a couple, 3 million, we don't know what kind of weather pattern we're going to have. You can at least pencil out some balance sheets that show supply-demand tightening down the road. But, you know, there's a long ways to go, but at least there's some visuals there. Wheat, U.S. wheat inventories are so low that, you know, if Iraq would buy 1 million tons, you'd take the hard red winter wheat carry out to nothing. So there's reasons to be long the wheat market fundamentally. Beans may just go along for the ride at this point.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they settled from the Chicago Board of Trade, and then we'll get down to the brass tacks of what we think really happened in the marketplace and how it managed to gain so much in the wheat and the corn pits, as well as a pretty good week in the beans. March oats, by the way, settled unchanged this week at 190 3/4. The wheat had a high in the March contract at 350 at the Board of Trade, a low at 324.5. They were up 17 cents for the week. On the Friday to Friday closes, 343.5 was the settlement price, and the March, July at 364, up 17.25 from last week. March corn, $2.20 3/4, the high, the low at 204 3/4, settlement price at 218 3/4, they were up 13 3/4. December contract at 254 1/4, up 11 3/4 for the week. We'll go ahead and finish out the numbers from the board. March beans, 590.5 on the high, the low at 565.5. March beans settled 21 1/4 cents higher at 589 1/4. November's at 621. They were up 23.5. There was a steady uptick in the corn market all week long as we watched it trade. What was it in Chicago or in the global marketplace fundamentally that you saw that may have moved this market, if anything at all?
Well, when we saw the sales for the week on Thursday, Todd, we saw a lot bigger sales than what we'd been expecting and looked for. And we would have to say that probably the commercials had rerouted business at the beginning of the week as those sales were going on in the cash market and buying the board. And that was part of the move up early in the week. And then when you couple that along with the enthusiasm of the index funds, the other funds, and then we go through different points, we're seeing just regular funds, not the index funds, but just the funds we've been used to for years, and they're also buying and covering some of their short positions. And finally, by the end of the week, when they'd pushed the corn and the wheat about as much as they could push them, they decided that some of the people didn't care to be as short as they were in the bean market, and it sort of exploded and built on itself, and along with some other fund buying there.
I think, too, the Dan mentioned the acreage, you know, Informa came out with the lower acres. I think, you know, the analysts start putting that into their balance sheets and start using some divergence from trend yield and coming up with some numbers, and you can see where you could reduce corn carry out pretty easily next year, not necessarily down to any levels that are real scary, but I think that that had something to do with the funds were the big thing, and going back to your first question there, I think the funds make the moves more dramatic and quicker. In other words, moving up here to the 220, 221 level on the March corn, I think that happened faster because you had the funds in there buying.
So we had good sales, which may have been the basis for the start of the rally in the week, and DBC or the other funds started to pick up, and then once that happened, we had continued buying. So will we see the rally continue, you think, into next week?
The supply demand tables if people keep talking about how much supply we have around and not enough demand, like I said, this will go all summer long, Todd. I think you have to look at the other fundamental is the valuation of the dollar. I think the impact of 9/11 is finally beginning to show through with the money expansion supply that Greenspan had to expand to keep the economy from going through a recession after 9/11, the cheaper interest rates. So that tells me you've got a lot of dollars out here hunting for something to invest in or buy. And we went through this in the 70s when we took corn from $1.60 to $4, when we took soybeans from $3.20 to $13, we took $1.60 wheat to $6 or $7. I'm not too sure. That ain't the fundamental explanation. What's going on here is that we've got a lot of dollars chasing a limited amount of goods, and if that's the case, this thing's just getting warmed up.
We don't have the inflationary fears, though, and we don't have
By the time people start talking about inflation, the move will be over with.
That's it. Done. Okay. Everybody's quiet.
Well, Todd, I think that we do have to, when we talk about inflation, if you've watched the interest rates have been inching on up every time here. You know, we've seen it moving up. We've seen the housing industry slow because of the interest rates moving on up. And so we are a little bit scared of inflation. We don't raise interest rates because we aren't.
And the Federal Reserve is caught. If it starts raising interest rates in a soft economy, it's going to tear up half the economy. It's going to go into a major recession.
Kaboom.
So how are they going to slow down inflation? So I think it's a green light for index funds to basically buy commodities and take them as high as they want to take them.
And it's all good news for farmers, then, or is there bad news in
it? Well, I'm not too sure it's good news because what's going to happen is as corn and soybean values go up, their input costs also go up. We're taking everything up. So as prices go up, input costs are going to go up. So it's not necessarily a gravy train, but it does kind of have a feel that we're ratcheting up price levels to a little different level than what we've been accustomed to.
Admittedly, this is the first time I've ever thought $5,000 acre land might be a decent buy if what you're talking about is the case. It's the only thing that you can say you can invest in and maybe get your money back out of later.
The bad part, Todd, is input costs have went up first before the price of grain. We've got anhydrous up high. We've got the fuel to run the combine, the steel for the combine and the tractor. All of those things have got out of hand first. And if we look at the fundamentals of the grain, the corn, the beans and everything like that, we can't fundamentally say, other than the inflation thing that Dan's been talking about here and the index funds have been talking about, that they can get the price they need for what their inputs are going on up. If they'll follow, then it's just sort of, we've just turned into spending more dollars to make more dollars, take more dollars to live on.
Well, that's a relatively bleak outlook then across the world of agriculture.
Unfortunately, yes.
I don't know if it would be bleak. It's just changing the rules of the game.
I think one thing that you're changing, I mean, realistically, a farmer could have gotten $280, $290 for his corn this year selling the corn and then coming in getting the LDP.
LDP and a countercyclical payment.
The change may be that the market gives him that opportunity to actually sell the corn for that price as we move forward. I'm not saying necessarily in the real short term here, but that may end up being a zero-sums game for the farmer. It may just be revenues coming from a different source.
You know, after the 70s run-up, nobody participated in farm programs. I mean, farm program participation and farm bureau policy discussions basically went to the sidelines until 1982, after we had a big crop. And by then, interest rates were up. We were on the deflationary side of the curve. Then we had to get back into the farm program business, and then we came with the PIC program of 83, and it just, you know.
Didn't raise any ground. Didn't raise any
ground. So, you know, if you look at it from that point of view, it's probably time that we have a 5 or 6 year period here that farm bill doesn't mean anything.
It's been an interesting discussion so far today. Shall we talk about the commodity markets along the way, too?
One thing I might mention, Wayne had mentioned the sales, the export sales. I thought something that wasn't talked about a lot but that was important was who bought that corn, or a big chunk of it was bought from Japan. And they'd been kind of holding back a little bit. China's been competing with us. Of course, they got some freight breaks. And I think that was a kind of a very significant fact that they came into the market as big as they did this week and bought corn.
All right, let's move on, and we'll get to Drew Lerner here in a moment. We'll talk about the weather across the globe and discuss some of the really cold weather that's been happening in the former Soviet bloc countries and in the southwest here in the United States in the very dry areas, and then what's been, I think, pretty decent weather in South America. From the Mercantile Exchange, live cattle this week, February had a high of 96.45, a low at 93.67.5. They settled 93.90. They were off a buck 87 from last week, and the March new lead option in your feeder cattle at 110.62.5, down a buck 97.5 from last week's settlement price. February bellies, or February hogs, I'm sorry, 59.35 on the high, the low at 56.05, and they settled the lean hogs at 56.25, down $3. February bellies at $76 even, finished at $5.27.5 lower from last week. Of course, we're back into this thing where we've got, you brought up Japan, and they're getting corn, but they're not taking beef anymore. And it just seems to that they're opening and shutting this on trade. And I did hear, J.B. Penn got in trouble for for saying that they had a better chance of getting hit by a car than they did by getting infected with BSE from U.S. beef imports. I think Tom Harkin got mad at him for that comment.
We all have our moments and misspeak.
And that may be one of them. So what do we do with the cattle at $110.62.5? Is it going to continue to ride that high?
I think the cattle market is in trouble, simply from the competition of very inexpensive chicken breasts. The chicken breast market, the bottom has fallen out of that. So if you're a savvy housewife, you're going to find out to do chicken seven ways is very cheap. The pork has had a pretty good decline in here. So if they get tired of pork or to get tired of chicken, they can move to pork. So beef, I think, is going to is very vulnerable in here, and you can see the market begin to drip lower. The inventory report shows more inventory around than I think the market was prepared for. So now the Japan thing may get the blame for it, but I think the underlying supplies of pork and chicken are going to kind of take some of the glory off of the beef market.
You know, I want to go back and hit the grains one more time, just on one more subject on the cash side. When we talked with our analyst on Friday afternoon out of Williamsville, which is Logan County, Sangamon County area, he suggested that he had at his elevator some of the biggest movement for corn that he'd had all year, and I think he said he moved through about 10% of what his total inventory might be. Would that be the case in Lexington where you were, Bill?
We really saw kind of that first move up to the $2 area at the first of the year was a bunch of big, huge amount of corn sold, cash corn. This move up this time this week, we bought a large amount of corn, but probably not, you know, half of what we bought that first of the year. So I think you got, you know, and that's typical. The next time you're going to have a little bit less bought, and you probably need to go to that next trigger level for the farmer or drop and buy the corn that way, or time will buy it. But we didn't have as much corn bought this week as we did the first of the year.
Is there as much corn, you think, sold at this now as there was at this time last year? I mean, we ended up at the, and I guess I'm getting at this, that we ended up in the summertime month as we went into June. There was a lot of corn in the bin that was still owned by the farmer that got moved into the market at a good price. And I'm wondering whether they've been on the old crop now, whether they're moving it faster this year than they did last or not.
They may be. I mean, every time you kind of get caught with more inventory than what you thought you should have had and cheaper prices, then the following year you have a tendency to be a little more aggressive. I think you may see, you may begin to see some of that. But price levels haven't really went to the point that's really attractive to get farmers real aggressive. But, you know, this is the time of year cash flow needs begin to increase as they get ready to go into the spring. So they're going to have to let go of some of this inventory.
Todd, I'm going to somewhat disagree with Dan here. I think that they're very tight holders. They've been very tight holders of old crop. The LDPs give them the cash flow they needed up until now, and they did not, because of the large carry, did not sell near as much at harvest as usual. So I think the farmer actually owns a little more corn than usual at this time of year. But I'm also going to say that I think he's been more aggressive selling new crop than he was last year, because he doesn't want to get in the situation where it comes harvest and the basis is wide and it's terrible and I can't do it. He wants to just be able to have it contracted or haul it in later and take his LDP, but he wants it contracted.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The last week of January continued on the same warm pace that we've been at all month. Most of Illinois, and indeed much of the Midwest, is on track for one of the warmest Januaries on record. Temperatures this week, while warmer than normal, were not as warm as the first 2 weeks. Temperatures this week averaged from 2 to 4 degrees above normal, compared to double-digit departures the first 2 weeks of the month. For the month as a whole, temperatures are running 10 to 13 degrees above normal across Illinois. There was no precipitation of significance during the week after the major event last weekend, which left up to 11 inches of snow on the ground in northern Illinois. The good news is that with the expected precipitation this weekend and early next week, January precipitation should be near to above normal for most of Illinois by the end of the month. Speaking of next week, there is the possibility of a significant precipitation event Monday into Tuesday, and that bears watching. The first half of the week should bring in colder, blustery weather, bringing temperatures down to near normal levels, if not a bit below, for a day or two. We should see temperatures moderate a little the last half of next week, ahead of another storm system perhaps next weekend. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. We're joined now by Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He's our regular Wednesday afternoon analyst on the Closing Market Report. Thanks for taking time out again today. We appreciate it, Drew.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
All right. What, in your mind, and there seems to be a number of hot spots around the globe, what is the most dangerous thing that's been happening for commodities in the world at this time?
I think it's right here in our backyard. Probably the southern U.S. plains, hard red wheat country, the cotton, corn, and sorghum producing areas in Texas, Oklahoma, all that region down there has been progressively drying, and the moisture deficits down there are very impressive. It looks a lot like the 1950s. The upper air flow pattern that we are experiencing right now is just about identical to that of 1952, which was the first year of a series of droughty years across the nation's midsection. And these moisture deficits that we've got in the soil are not looking like they're going to go away right away. Now, in a few weeks, we may encounter a couple of meaningful precipitation events. You know, any drought has a break in it at some point, and I think we'll probably see some much-needed moisture fall in the southern U.S. plains at some point in time. But the long-term outlook is still for a very dry scenario. And what makes this even more interesting than what I've just described is that this pattern is one that could easily expand to the north and maybe even the northeast as we go through the warm season ahead. And with these massive moisture deficits that we're still carrying in parts of Nebraska and Iowa and Illinois, it could get very interesting as we get closer to the heart of the growing season.
Let's just take that one step further, Drew. And could you give us a quick review as to the El Nino, La Nina, and where we're at and what that means to the growing areas?
Absolutely. We do have a La Nina that is well underway. As far as I'm concerned, it is with us in full strength, but I think the government has held back on declaring it quite yet. But all the anomalies that are associated with La Nina are in place worldwide. For the U.S., certainly a warmer and drier bias in the central and southern plains is quite typical of La Nina winter seasons, and that's exactly what we've got going on right now. Warmer than usual temperatures across the southern U.S. are typical of La Nina, and wet weather in the northwestern part of the country is also quite typical. So we are following the trend here very closely. Our sea surface temperatures in the Pacific Ocean right now are certainly well below average and will continue below average for the next several months. The implication here is that as we move forward into the late winter and early weeks of spring, the dryness in the plains will continue. Like I said a few minutes ago, I think we'll probably see a break in the action for just a little while and then go back into a drier mode. As we go into the about mid-spring, we should see a wetter-than-usual bias develop across the heart of the Midwest. This will be for places like Illinois. Maybe Wisconsin, Michigan, and Indiana will have a little higher-than-usual opportunity for above-average precipitation during that period of time, probably March and April. And then after that, when we get into May and June and certainly July, the bias will switch the other direction, and we will probably trend just a little bit drier than usual across the heart of the Midwest. So we've got one shot opportunity that might cover a few weeks here where we can make up some of these moisture deficits in preparation for the drier period of time that will come on this summer.
How's that specifically affecting South America right now? I know the dominant pattern in South America has been mostly warm and dry. It seems like Argentina did pick up some rains here over the past couple of weeks, but has that pattern altered any down in South America?
Well, we thought it was going to change a couple of weeks ago when it was raining like it was, but we have slipped back into that same old mode again. There is a correlation with La Nina in Argentina. There's a tendency for eastern portions of Argentina to have a below-average precipitation bias during La Nina events. It's something that I've noticed myself over the last 20 years or so, and when La Niñas are around, they don't necessarily create a terrible crop down there. We can have a halfway decent crop, but it does suppress the rain amount so that we often are running moisture deficits. But it's what I have noticed is that there is a tendency for timely precipitation to occur, and that's kind of what we've seen in the recent weeks. You know, we were getting critically dry in Argentina, and then we managed to start seeing some rain here at mid-month, and I think it really came in time, certainly to support the soybean crop in a significant manner, but there was some of the corn, the early corn and sunseed crop that probably got too far down the road to benefit from that moisture. But I think this lighter-than-usual precipitation bias in Argentina is something we'll still be dealing with over the next few weeks.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thanks a lot for the invitation.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated. You can hear him on the Closing Mark Report on Wednesday afternoons. Now, a final word from our panelists. We'll start with you, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, Todd, between the index funds and some of the export business that we had this last week, I think we've been given some good opportunities to do a little bit of catch-up selling. We want to be very cautious, though, after we listen to Drew and talking about the weather. So keep an eye on the weather and don't get too oversold.
Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services.
Just looking at the charts, chart action is quite friendly. It does suggest that the winter lows are in place. They kind of came maybe a week or so early. Normally, we don't really start an uptick in the winter until you get kind of into the first few days of February. So it does look like we've kind of turned up here. Seasonally, if we stay on track, prices have strengthened, you know, kind of into the first week of March or so, and then we begin to maybe level out and we kind of wait to see what spring weather pattern is.
And Bill Mayer.
With the higher markets this week, we still see the put option volatility relatively tame, and I think that's a good opportunity if you want to make sure you got some floors locked in, but keep yourself open to the upside. That's a good choice to make.
Thank you, gentlemen. That's the Commodity Week program for this week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.